This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we will be talking about a little bit of news, specifically a regional recap. Next we'll be doing the second in our series of houses, and we will be talking with Justin Shear around House Lannister. Finally, we'll have a little bit of closing remarks.
All right, John, this is episode 14, and there's actually not a whole bunch of FFG news to go over.
But there's a lot of other news.
Yeah, regional season is full swing, and we got a bunch of regional results to report.
So I know that Australia finished their first regional, and Justin Shear took it down with a Lannister deck that he ends up talking about on this show.
Yes, it's quite fitting. We assumed he was going to win, obviously, but the previous segment was recorded before he won, so keep that in mind when you're listening to it. But we had some other previous guests on the show do quite well in a tournament, although they didn't take it. The Sheffield Regional in the UK, Tagore took first in the Swiss, and James went into the top four, although that was won by a Stark No Agenda running Negotiations of the Great Sept.
Do we know who the name of the person that ran that?
Wedge, I believe. Wedge is the one who won that.
Yeah, I think it was Wedge as well, so that's good.
And then I've gotten lots of people contacting me with other results for this week. So I have the full results for Lyon in France, where a Greyjoy Black Sails running Manning the City Walls took that. Someone contacted me with the results for Kuwait. They will be up in the sheet sometime this week when they get around to it, but I do know that Alani No Agenda running Castellan took that one. And I just as we recorded, heard from Murcia in Spain, where Stark No Agenda running Mira took the win. But we have a really meaty discussion of what turns out to be a regional winning deck, so I don't think we'll waste any further time.
Today we have an extremely special guest from the Lounge Down Under, Justin, known sometimes as the Bieber. Hi, Justin.
How you doing, Dodge?
This is the first time we've had a guest from this far afield.
Yeah, I know when Tiny was doing his podcast, Bertie jumped on there, but, well, Bert got eaten by a shark. He's sadly no longer with us.
That's what I've heard as well.
Yeah, very sad stuff.
So we've got Justin on today to talk about, I guess this is probably your second favorite house?
Yeah, look, I play all the houses. I play them a lot. I don't play Targ as much. I love Lannister. I think they got some of the most interesting, fun cards. I think Baratheon is probably my favorite, but yeah, Lannister would definitely be up there.
So before we get into the cast, we like our guests to kind of tell us a little bit about themselves. So can you tell us about your AGOT history, Justin?
Well, I picked a game up maybe 3 years ago. We saw the TV show, I read the books, saw there was a game, jumped straight into it. And there was no sort of pre-existing group in Melbourne, so we all kind of learned together. And, yeah, it was a real blast. Kind of started, you know, with the classic sort of Dragons and then Siege. I remember looking at sort of Humber Jimenez's decks, sort of contemporaneous with us getting in and sort of building a few of those Siege decks and tormenting my local group with my take on Humber's deck. I'm pretty sure I only made the deck worse with my changes, but nonetheless, for a solid, you know, 6 weeks, that deck was a monster. And yeah, since then, sort of branched out a bit, and the events here are pretty much costs of travel, so, you know, the metas don't interact all that much, so the, you know, playing regional store champs and the Octagon tournaments.
Well, you've won some regional, some store champion or regionals, whatever they are as well, haven't you?
It drives my missus nuts. I have a shelf. I've got, I think, five regional trophies, and I, I went and won all of the Joust store championships in Melbourne.
So when we introduced the new FAQ, we said that this was roughly the fourth most affected house, that it had gotten off mostly scot-free with a few changes. Where do you think that the house sits right now, Justin?
I think the house is in pretty good shape. I think that you've got a lot of options with Lannister, and I think a lot of Lannister's natural predators have been sort of scared out of the environment, with one very important exception, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that being Dragon Pit, which makes Lannister quite dangerous. But you can do a lot of stuff with Lannister, and I think they're a great house, and if I was heading to a tournament, I'd be expecting to play a lot of Lannister.
And John?
I think Lannister's really solid as long as you take into account, you know, burn in some way or shape. So I agree with Justin. I think it's probably got builds that can easily win tournaments.
Just to be contrary, I'm actually going to say that I think while Lannister mostly got off scot-free, and, you know, a few changes where you have to reconsider Pentoshi or reconsider Preston and your no agenda, things like that, I don't know if they're that well placed right now. I'd probably place them fifth if I were to rank the houses. And I think they have some builds that can specifically counter things like Dragon Pit, and we're gonna go through those in detail. But I'd say that despite only minor tweaks to the house in the FAQ, it actually has dropped. It was dropping before the FAQ came out, where, you know, the no agenda that had Aoria had taken to Worlds had dominated and had done phenomenally, and it was gradually decreasing in prevalence. And I think that trend continues because the FAQ hasn't given it a huge boost.
I mean, Dissension hurts it a lot.
Yeah.
It has a lot of allies. It has refugees that it likes to use. So, yeah, I can see it that way. I still think it's very solid. When people start to tech against Dragon Pit and start playing these big armies or other, you know, large characters to get past it, kneeling out those characters count for a lot because they've invested a lot of gold, therefore a lot of their resources, into those characters. And Lannister does that in spades.
Yeah, I agree there, John. I also think that there's a couple of builds. So there's Pitt, there's Quentin, both of which have unfavorable matchups for just your typical Lannister builds. I do think, however, that, you know, you get these builds in, so you start to see more Greyjoy, especially Greyjoy Blacksails, come to chase them away. And Lannister remains exceptionally good against Greyjoy Blacksails. So as the meta takes some shape, I think Lannister will have a pretty important place within that.
I think that's a fair point. I think it will have a resurgence. I think that it'll still be a few weeks away, unless, of course, it performs phenomenally this weekend.
I'm hoping that it will.
So that might be a decent enough segue to say, how is it going to perform this week? Or what is going to perform this weekend, Justin?
Lannister Tunnels. That's the deck that's going to take it out, I think. No, look, if I was going to make a prediction about the regional, I would say we're going to see a lot of Quentin, a lot of Stark No Agenda, and a bit of Lanny No Agenda as sort of the, and of course Dragon Pit as the decks that I think people will gravitate to. There'll be a bit of Wildlings, a bit of Conquest, Rush, and sort of a big Wildling or Dothraki aggro as well. And that's why I've sort of gone with Tunnels, because I think in general it matches up pretty well to most of those decks.
All right, well, maybe walk us through some of the big decisions and the big parts of your Tunnels deck that sort of define it.
All right. Well, I guess there's a lot of little things that I've played a lot of Tunnels. I really like the build. I think it's traditionally been sort of a second-tier build, but I do think that it's got a few characteristics that make it quite good. So it's got a fair bit of Neil, and as you'll see from the list, I've included it's a little module that I actually picked up from the Nodge, where you're including the Wildling Splash to get the Janos' Conspiracies in there. I've got Alchemist Guild Halls, of course. I've got Harry the Riverlands. And I've got a few other sort of comes into play. Control effects. I've got Pentoshi Manor. So I think all of those things give me a fair bit of control against the big rush decks and the big aggro decks to sort of even it out. Of course, Tunnels itself over time generates a lot of strength on the board. And I'm definitely playing sort of the mid-late game. The river plots, obviously, they take sort of, you know, 4 or 5 turns to really kick in, but they generate a tremendous amount of card advantage. And in Tunnels, keeping that card flow high, even though I've got a lot of draw effects in the deck, is really important. And if I can keep getting a lot of cards, keep putting them down into shadows, you know, my characters get very, very big and very, very threatening. There's a few sort of Tunnel staples like Shagger and Sir Balon, both of which are just exceptional characters in Tunnels to just keep a lot of high-strength defense happening. And then there's a few sort of little quirky choices. So I've got, like, the Winter King's Roads in there to help against a lot of the Winter decks that I expect to play against.
totally just ruined the tech, Justin. Now everyone's going to be just throwing in Winter's King's Roads and Carrion Birds in their decks to screw people that are playing Winter.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm just not playing the birds, but
I'm playing the
Winter
birds
King's Road is an absolute brutal force in that matchup.
Yeah.
Every time I go first, enjoy that, losing extra cards to your own King's Roads. I am running one copy of Lionsgate. I'd run more if I didn't expect so much Winter. We're a pack behind the United States, so we don't have the Lost Message and so on. So I would definitely be playing another one of those, and that turns on some of my effects, like I'm running a copy of Dissension. I've got a House Divided in. And I'm also running one copy of Lashing Out, which I think at the moment is a phenomenal card. It really changes the mirror match, Lannister versus Lannister, and it fundamentally alters Martell-Quentin matchup, where if they come in with Arianne, you know, any other character basically, to take it out before they can Gaston it away, and they've got no cancel for it probably. It's just brutal. I love it.
So I like a couple things that you've done with the deck. Your plots especially. So you've got Forgotten Plans, and I'm assuming that's for stuff against like First Snow Winter and King's Law. But I love that you're running, you know, because of the Wildling tech, you can use Betrayal at the Wall to make sure you can time that plot. So I think that's so key in the current meta to have some call against King's Law because a lot of people are running it.
Yeah, King's Law obviously is one that it's aimed at, but there's a few other really cool things you can do with it. Obviously, you can use it to win initiative against the choke deck, and I do expect to be playing some choke, which can be really handy, even if it is just to flip into your 5-3-1. And it also lets you check for things like blockade. You can flip it in. If it's blockade, well, then you obviously don't flip to your 5-3-1. You can flip to Forgotten Plans. So you've got those things. And the other thing that I think is really hot is using Betrayal to flip into at the Palace of Sorrows to protect against, if they're playing the city plots, a city besieged. And it, so, you know, they'll usually use the city besieged early to clear off, say, a Pentoshi Manor, and then they're relying on the copy plot to actually get rid of the tunnels. And the turn that copy plot's coming, you bounce your tunnels away to safety and just replay it. It's a backbreaking if you can pull it off.
One thing I want to comment on before we move along is the plot deck. You have, you know, you've chosen the rivers, and we had tested against, I think it was your build around Gen Con last year, and it was a deck that was drawing a phenomenal number of cards. And so it seems like the rivers might almost be overkill. I mean, you can never have too much draw, but going from drawing 5 cards a turn to drawing 7 cards a turn is not as impressive. Is it just because you've ditched the Pyromancer's Case for the Pentoshis, or is the deck fundamentally restructured because of the way the draw has changed?
I think there's a few things. The first is I don't think cities are anywhere near as important or as good as they were in the past. I think rivers are a better alternative there. And I did test a bit with an alternative plot deck that was running things like Desolate Passage, Retaliation, Shadows and Spiders and So-So Schemes. It was a very control-y sort of plot deck. What I found was that I didn't need a lot of the control in the plot deck. The control within the deck was generally ample, and what I was running into was just running dry on cards or having trouble getting a good consistency in that early game, whereas if you can go Nysaar, copy it, crossing, you know, you get sort of 4 cards in those first 3 plots. It allows you to get into more economy, more card draw, and more characters, and most of the characters in this are really cheap, so, you know, it just gives me a lot of sort of potential to really flood the board and just really dominate the game. I mean, ultimately, what I want to do is have so many extra cards that I'm not punished by having them just sitting in shadows doing nothing for me.
So I guess the other big change that comes to this list from your previous iteration of the list is the fact that you get the refugees back.
Oh.
I guess maybe you can start on that.
The refugees also change the way the plot deck goes, because having the refugees, if you're not drawing phenomenal answer cards, drawing them late can be kind of really disappointing. And you get this character, he's probably not going to stick around for long. He's vulnerable to dissension. He's going to go in Dom. So they're not that exciting. I mean, they're better in this deck than in most because I get the strength buff. But, yeah, having the refugees makes the setup so much better. Like, I routinely drop 4, sometimes even 5 cards with this, which is phenomenal.
Especially with the dogs, right? The dogs are so good in this type of deck.
Well, the dogs also kick off with the gold cloaks. They're just phenomenal. And, yeah, having the refugees back, I can't tell you enough how good it is. And it also helps me maximize that massive amount of card draw that I'm getting. And there are things like Jamie, the little campfire mime counts as both a mercenary and a Kingsguard for Jamie and the Goldcloaks respectively. you know, I've still got Golden Tooth Mines.
So what drove your decision to use Pentoshi as a restricted over the alternatives where you could potentially be running maybe even Preston in this list?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would.
Well, Preston was the first restricted card I tested in the list, and Preston is phenomenal. With Preston, you're obviously doing slightly different things, and if Sir Robert Strong was available to me, that's really cool to flip Robert Strong out, bounce him back after my opponent has gone marshalled, and then that's all great stuff. And Preston and Jamie are a great little draw engine. It's fantastic. But one of the things that Tunnels runs into trouble with are keywords like Deadly and Stealth that can just push their challenges past your big characters. And with the Pentoshis, that really limits that. And then you can do cute things like, Lion's Gate can strip the power off them, and then you can turn them into a Night's Watch and a Greek can steal them. Cute things like that. But, yeah, the Pentoshis really allow me to eliminate Stealth and Deadly. And that makes Balon, Swan, and Shagger just so good.
So I guess the question there is now, what do you think are your best matchups and your worst matchups for this deck?
It's kind of difficult because I think in general I've opted to try and get as many neutral matchups as possible. There are a few decks that I'm going to crush. Those decks are things that, say, rely on black sails. The amount of control I have is enough. The Harrys at the moment and sort of the other events to that extent really punish sort of fairly aggressive Lannister builds that are filled with very cheap characters. Similarly, another reason why this deck matches up really well to Greyjoy isn't that a Harry can kneel out their entire board sometimes. So I think those decks I'm going to have a slightly favorable matchup to, but mostly it's neutral matches. Dragon Pit, which a lot of people think Tunnels just stomps, I don't believe that to be the case. I think Dragon Pit's a neutral matchup, which is a dramatic improvement from the unfavorable matchups that other Lannister decks have against it. But neutral, maybe it's slightly in my favor, especially if I'd see things like the Gold Cloaks early. But most of my characters, even with the buffs, you know, they're still only 2 or 3 strength, most of them. Some are a little bit bigger, and yeah, there'll be some characters they can't burn through, but you know, they can play the Shadows game, they can potentially get the pit kicking off, maybe they can't, but a good pit deck, I think it's neutral. Any deck that's running a lot of allies and stuff, I'm gonna punish as well, with the Dissension, the Ser Aris, the Varus, and the ability to reuse both Ser Aris and Varus, I think. I'm gonna punish those types of decks. I really want to be matched up against Lannister No Agenda and Lannister Power Behind the Throne as often as possible, if they come up. And, of course, Choke. I think this deck really matches up well to Choke. If you hit a lot of economy early, they're going to struggle.
One of the key decks that we've mentioned recently has been Wildlings. It's come up in a couple of conversations.
Oh, of course, yeah. There are a few things. Agreet is an absolute bomb against Wildling decks. I've got a lot of Neil to clear away their big characters. Harry's not going to do as much for me, but then again, they're probably going to have refugees and free men, if nothing else. And the House Divider, I've only got one, but, you know, you bounce out a big Wildling army, and they're pretty good. I think I'm pretty close to neutral. I haven't tested the matchup enough, but the Pentoshis help a lot as well.
I mean, I think it depends if they're expecting a lot of Tunnels, because if they are, I think Stark in general breaching will end up breaching, yeah.
Yeah.
And if they run breaching, that could be bad.
Oh, yeah. I have one Paper Shield, and if I'm playing against Stark Wildlings, I'm mulliganing aggressively for it in case they're running Breaching. I think if they're not running Breaching, it's a badly built Wildling deck, but yeah, one Breaching just clears my board. So early game against Stark Wildlings is really risky. They're going to have the strength, I can't stop them, so I'm really relying on my control effects. And yeah, if they stick a Breaching, I lose. So, rough.
Yeah. I think almost any Stark could run a Breaching and could give you that type of trouble. If they can get
I would. Yeah. I don't actually expect to play against it. I think it's fairly new tech. I think a lot of people haven't cottoned on to Breaching yet. But, yeah, if you stick a Breaching, I lose. And hopefully, look, if I'm really lucky, the Rivers will... Because, you know, Stark Wildlings will probably be playing Rivers. The Rivers may reveal the Breaching to me, which is the downside of running cards like Lashing Out as well, I should point to. If your opponent sees it with a river, it's really disappointing. But, yeah, hopefully I'll see the Breaching coming so I can at least...
Before we talked, I would have probably placed Tunnels as the best Lannister deck right now. And I think you're convincing me that that's probably still the case.
Well, Lannister's also got two other things that are quite pointy in the current meta. I think potentially either Conquest or Power Behind the Throne rush decks, especially with Fear of Winter. You know, if you get the right matchups, they can really blow people out.
Well, that's a phenomenal segue.
Yeah, because I happen to have built a Power Behind the Throne deck. So I guess I'll talk a little bit about it quickly. So I am running Fear of Winter. And the basic idea behind the deck is to pre-plot, use things like Harry of the Riverland and You've Killed the Wrong Dwarf to kneel out your opponent's board so that when you do play Fear of Winter, they have almost nothing standing so that you can quickly push through two intrigue challenges to hit their hand very heavily and then a two claimer to clear their board. At which point you continue with two claimers or blockade to reduce their options to come back from that. So, you know, a wildling deck that you hit with the Fear of Winter before they can get a horde out. If they do get a horde out, you might be in trouble because you might not be able to push through that military claim that would be key. But if they don't, I think you would have an okay lead. You'll actually have an okay chance against. It also runs Dry Season to help versus some of the Greyjoy matchups. Betrayal at the Wall because I am using the same Nightwatch / Wildling tech to get more Neil in the deck. So I'm running three enemy enforcers, three of the new conspirators. So I have a ton of Neil just from characters, plus the events gives this Power Behind the Throne deck an extremely heavy Neil presence in order for it to be able to continue to control the few characters that people are going to keep on the board. However, I think Burn in general is a bad matchup. The deck doesn't run a ton of Renown or a ton of Power Claim. It's more of a delayed rush, and that gives them more time to set up. If I can hit their hand hard enough, I think, in the early rounds, especially if I can fear and then, you know, either do a blockade or another two-claimer and just whack their hand heavily, I might be able to come out ahead, but it's probably an unfavorable. I'm running a lot of draw. Iron Throne, obviously. I got an Ashmar. I like this location. The fact that you can discard a card to get a gold is really, really nice, basically because Tywin Lannister is a beast. I'm running two of him. Especially if I can set him up before Fear of Winter and I use my cards to kneel you out and he's on because you wouldn't be able to play enough cards, he can just close games out so quickly on his own. But also because I can discard my own cards to pump my Sir Gregor's Dogs, which I'm running in the deck.
That's a really interesting choice there. And now that you're talking about it, I'm thinking, well, how can I incorporate this in my deck for many of the same reasons? Yeah, I really like Ashmark. I think that's a really interesting call.
I'm also running some attachment, Widow's Wail, Longclaw, and my only other event that's not Neil is a Secret Orders. I really love Secret Orders. I love that it's any phase. I think people underestimate this. In my current meta, there's a player that uses Secret Orders pre-plot to give your character zero strength because you haven't counted gold yet. And then he flips, and this is like T1 sometimes, you know, the city plot that kills a character with strength equal to the number of city plots in your use battle. Zero kills zero, and he can, you know, kill a wildling army with a Secret Order plus that plot. So it can be fun.
Yeah, but you're not running that plot, are you?
I'm not, but I still think it's really good. I'm just showing you how it could be cool.
So I have a couple of questions looking at this list. It does look like it could be pretty explosive and a pretty strong start. The first thing that I think would counter it is that a lot of people, if they have Forgotten Plans, are going to open with it when they see Power Behind the Throne.
Yeah, and that's actually why I'm running stuff like Retaliation and Meta Pride, so that I can actually open with a different type of two-claim plot after the cut once they know I have Fear of Winter.
Question, though, why are you running Men of Pride rather than, say, Breaking and Entering?
For the removal of the keywords, and that's more of a meta call. So there's a bunch of Noble Cause being played in the Ottawa and Gatineau area right now. And because of that, Meta Pride is extremely useful because it removes that keyword.
So questions that I have are mostly that you mentioned it's a delayed rush and it needs to keep going. But, I mean, if you've pulled off your opening and you've gotten some decent claim to entry challenges, you've already set yourself up for card advantage. It seems like a fairly fast deck like yours that gets a convincing lead early on might not need three Golden Tooth Mines and a Tycho Nestoris, these cards that don't pay off until the next turn.
I could agree with that. I could see replacing Gold Tooth Mine Tycho. Now, the reason that I put them in here was because I did want to have an ability for a long game. So if I get an explosive start, but it doesn't pan out for some reason, maybe they're able to neutralize my characters. Maybe it's another Lannister player. I carry their cards, and they carry me right back. So I'm not going to be able to use my Fear Winter as effectively turn one, and I opt to go with a different claim two, and they manage to control me, maybe icon removal or some other form of control. I want to be able to still be in the game, and the only way I can still be in the game is if I can generate constant card advantage in some form. And that's why those four cards are there.
And Jon Snow? Is he just there as something you can get Longclaw on? Or
he's got renown? He's a Night's Watch?
Yeah, he's a Night's Watch, so he triggers the Dispiriters. He basically has renown because he has a response that claims him power when he's in challenges. So, yeah, speeds up the deck a little bit, meets the Night Watch criteria that I wanted.
And so you had a chance to field this deck or some version of it before?
Yeah. So an earlier version of this deck, I took second at the Gatineau Regional. Mikey took first in a regional in the States with, and Aaron piloted it to second in the regional, losing to a Dragon Pit deck.
I think Adam also piloted a version of that same deck and made the cut at that same regional, didn't he?
Yeah, he got fourth at that time.
So it has undergone a trial by fire, or if not fire, then at least combat.
Yeah, this was all before the new FAQ, and that actually, I think, made the deck stronger. It let the refugees go in. It removed some of those mass resets that caused a little bit of problems for the deck. It opened up some more options, I think, actually. So,
just another very small card that jumps out at me as being a bit of an odd one is you've got Princess of the Sun, the Hound, in the deck. You're already, I think it's 61 cards, if I've added that up right. And I just wonder, you know, why is the Hound in there in that you've already got a bad matchup to, you know, the burn decks. He's going to be bouncing back the hand a lot. Why not just cut him?
Well, I don't think you can even play him. Actually, you could probably cut him. I'm running 35 characters, so you could probably take him out completely. Originally, when I was running this, there was Black Sails, there was Stark, and, of course, the Old Way. So the Hound plays well against those three decks.
All right, well, you already talked about some of the bad matchups you think it has. At least briefly, you were mentioning that some of the icon control and a mirror match against Lanny that can get some pre-plot Neil against you back. What else do you feel are its weaknesses going in?
So I don't think those are actually... The Lanny, I don't think, is a bad matchup. I think it's a 50-50 matchup. I think it comes down to who gets those lasting draw effects going first. Generally, especially once they're, you know, hip to the Fear of Winter and blockade in the deck, if for some reason you get to the cut and the person isn't aware of those cards, then you can do quite well against the Lanny No Agenda or Hyper Neo Lanny decks out there, I think. The deck that I'd be most scared of, honestly, there's not a single deck that's jumping to mind that I'm extremely worried about other than Burn. So, you know, I think Dragon Pit is going to have a favorable matchup against this, generally by a little bit, if it's well built.
I disagree with that. I think that your deck has a big glaring flaw to the deck that I built.
Okay, really? What is that glaring flaw?
Well, it's not really necessarily a huge flaw at that point, but I think that No Agenda does really, really well against Power Behind the Throne because the vast majority of No Agenda, including mine, are running Summoned by the Conqueror and can fetch Alaris, which wrecks your deck.
When I played this, I actually ran into Alaris a few times. There's a couple nice things in the deck to help you versus Alaris. You got Ygritte, of course. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for a person that summons for Alaris to get him down turn one and keep him on the board. They're sacrificing some of their other beefier characters that they played, generally, if they're doing that. So if they choose to do that, then you can keep the pressure on very easily, and you can probably get rid of Alaris from military claim. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, but if you have to push the military claim early, you're still potentially losing two intrigue challenges and having the opponent win an intrigue challenge against you to draw a card off that. That starts to backfire very, very quickly, and that's assuming that you can put enough pressure.
That hasn't been my experience. So, I think it depends on the skill level of the player, the opening plots, and when they play Alaris. If they try to get Alaris out in the first two turns, I think you're in better shape than actually if they wait for later game. If a Fear Winter turn, all they're playing is Alaris, you're doing okay. If you intrigue challenge, then they have a very difficult decision to make. Do they want to let you take another swipe at their hand, bringing them down to, you know, by four cards, or are they going to let you get the military through to clear most of their board?
But. Yeah, I kind of agree with Alex. I think that Alaris is a very dangerous card for Power Behind the Throne. I think it's a single card that would deter me from playing it at a tournament. I would be really scared of it. Someone just sticking an Alaris to the board, and then my game
calling
is over
intrigue and over and over and
yeah,
drawing cards
really
off
tough. Them. And it's not just out of Lannister either. I mean, you're going to see a lot of out of Quentin,
yep.
Which is already going to be tough, and Stark.
Yep, no agenda. I mean, he's a good card. I can only speak to the games I played. I didn't feel pressured by the two games I played versus people that had Alaris out. I mean, I had Ygritte one time by turn three or something. Maybe it would be good to drop half hand, bring Ygritte up to a two of to help counteract that.
Or you could run Nightmares as well. That's another solution, and possibly better than Secret Orders.
Sure.
Or even an Enslaved, possibly. Works well on a Fear of Winter turn.
You also have the Iron Throne. So you have some solutions in the deck. You have at least three right now, and I think maybe you're right. Maybe you can drop the Secret Orders to throw in a Nightmares to have another one. Well, you talked a little bit about your deck. It's a Lani No Agenda, Alex?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm at the disadvantage in that I had to build a deck that I haven't actually played or playtested extensively, so my list may look a little cruder. No Agenda has three main advantages over running an agenda. The first is stabilization against anti-agenda effects. So things like Northern Cavalry Flank, the fleets, anything that counters agenda. And so there is an inherent safety in running No Agenda. The second is Summoned by the Conclave. It is a phenomenal plot. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a lot of versatility to search out key characters, and it makes me feel a little bit better about running a character as my restricted card. And third advantage, really specific to Lannister, is the ability to use the Brigands and Kevin to some extent.
Alaris.
And have them in the deck, and Alaris and things like that. So characters that also key off. So I wanted to make sure I got most of those benefits of running No Agenda, in being able to search out my restricted, in being able to get Alaris, in being able to use the Brigands. And once I decided that Preston was going to be my restricted, I basically started building a Knights deck that wasn't using the Knights of the Realm agenda. Because I feel like Lannister Knights of the Realm doesn't do all that well against other Knights of the Realms, and because it doesn't have the same direct removal. But Lannister has enough draw that it doesn't need the agenda to fuel that draw. So I basically included City of Lies, On My Oath, and then some pressure plots. I also included the Betrayal at the Wall module that we all seem to have included, with a little bit of extra Neil, some Wildlings, and some Night's Watch in there.
Probably because I'm persistent in my belief that it's a good module.
I think it's a sensational module.
I think it's a sensational module, but John, I will remind you that I was playing that before you were.
Well, you suck.
So on top of that, some stranger things that I put in here. Initially, I really wanted to play with the new Sir Robert Strong because I don't have a very good feel on how great he is. But with Preston, I know he's better. And so I made sure that I had on my oath to get him back if he does happen to drop or Preston does happen to drop. But mostly it's the Kingsguard. It's the knights that form the backbone of this deck.
I really like Sir Robert Strong when you can, you know, return him to shadows after your opponent's marshaled. So they marshal you before their end of their marshal. You use Preston, pop him back into shadows. You can play all your cards. They don't nail, and then you know he can come out later to cause them more havoc.
The downside with that, of course, is that it makes Preston vulnerable to actually dying
later on. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You do have On My Oath to bring him back, and that's not necessarily a terrible way to use it.
No.
One piece of tech that I have in here that I really, really like is Betrayal at the Wall into Art of Seduction. It's just a phenomenal way to fish for a plot that you want to lock down. It makes using that on a Valor easier, and when you're using it against river plots, you wind up delaying half their draw by a turn. It can be really, really damaging against rivers, which John tells me are the best thing ever printed. And it's also still very, very good against cities, very, very good against a Maester deck that's going to open with At the Gates and things like that, where you know you can delay some of these things and catch when revealed effects. But Betrayal at the Wall makes it just that much easier to use.
Yeah, very safe. Very safe.
Yep, I like it a lot. One thing that jumps out at me that you don't have in here is, you know, a counter to the Dragon Pit that we've all been screaming about. Why are you not running Tunnels with so many Shadow cards? It's a, you know, in any other match, Tunnels would also be good anyways. You know, you play it and get a strength bump of 2 or 3 to all your guys.
Well, the simple answer is I didn't really think about it, and I didn't think I had the gold to do it. The more complicated answer, I'll pretend retroactively that it's because I knew that Justin was going to be presenting an HOD Tunnels deck, and I didn't want to build the exact same deck. I mean, it is sorely tempting to say that given that this deck has some low-strength characters in which you've invested a fair bit of gold, Burn worries me, and not just Dragon Pit, but basically every form of Burn. But I'm not sure if I can have room for 2 Tunnels. I feel like I'd also be gold-choked if I couldn't get Reliable Neil, if the Arbor Guardsmen get burned, things like that. I'm not even sure I could play it.
The problem that you're going to have is that your Tunnels, you'd have to commit virtually your entire turn to Tunnels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see
and
that.
And that's a huge tempo play when it matters. In that early game, you know, when Burn's going to clear your board on turn 2 or turn 3.
Yeah, but if they're going to clear your board and you can stop it through the play of Tunnels, and you otherwise you're going to lose your whole board.
Yeah, it's worth it, sure. But
yeah. I can see what you're saying. In every other game, you'll draw it and you'll never play it. It'll be a dead card.
Well, even in the Burn matchup, if you know, there'll be a lot of situations where, yeah, it'll protect you from losing your board, but their board will continue to advance, and you'll still lose all the challenges anyhow.
Yeah, I think this deck, more so than either of yours, has a big gaping vulnerability to Burn. You know, it's got a couple of high strengths. It's got the King Joffrey's Guard. It's got, you know, the Brigands that make things slightly harder to deal with. It's got Sir Boris Blunt, and I can jump him in and out of shadows, maybe, if I can keep Preston on the board, which is no guarantee. The Hound is also a reasonable card against Burn. He's going to have a couple mm-hmm. strength on him and going to be
sure.
hard to target. But I think that Burn is a really, really bad matchup for this deck.
Importantly, your big icons aren't in that magical green icon, which you really want against Burn. So that, you know, even if they can't burn away your big military icons, they're not that worried about that. It's the big green ones that are the real problem.
That put pressure on them. Yeah. I agree. But I'm not sure if there is a good way to make a no-agenda Burn resilient right now, except potentially, I was thinking King's Pavilion, but honestly, I only have a couple of non-kneelers in this deck, and the rest, they only stand after they win a challenge, and by then you've been burnt, so.
One thing I'm interested in is you're running both versions of Sir Aris.
That is almost certainly a mistake. well caught. I'm sure I can find another 60th card and get rid of the, I think I'd probably get rid of the Princess of the Sun one.
No.
You do it the other way around?
I did it the other way around. I had the Kingsguard Sir Aris in my Tunnels deck, but every time I drew him, I'm like, why aren't you the Princess of the Sun, Sir Aris?
All right, well, I'll take that under advisement and keep that.
The only other card that's interesting to me is Condemned by the Council. What location are you aiming to blow up with that event?
Those events mostly went in once I cut my 2 anti-location plots that I had initially put in, where I had started with some Dry Season and Burning Bridges just before I had sketched out the outline of the deck. And I felt, you know, I don't have the Pyromancer's Apprentices, and I don't particularly want them because I'll always have something else to pull out of Shadows. And I really felt like I needed a way to answer some problem locations.
Like Maiden's Bane.
To get Maiden's Bane if I can push through an entry challenge, which I'm hoping I can. I'm also thinking Meraxes or Golden Tooth Mines or anything anyone sticks Pyromancer's Kayshan, because I don't want to fall behind on the draw game. But, you know, they're mostly for matchups that are probably going to be pretty bad for me anyway. So I could be convinced, depending on how it plays out, to find a better solution for those 2 events. But I do think they have some use. They give you an answer.
Absolutely. My feeling on them is that every time I've drawn one, I've always had a good target for it, even if that's just blowing up like a Winter King's Road or something. But realistically, in the matchups where I want my events to do something, the condemns don't really have important targets. So I'll always play it when I draw it. It's easy to play. But the amount of game swing I get from that particular event tends to be a lot lower than something like a cheeky one copy of Lashing Out, which I think is a really underrated card, but it works better in tunnels. But something like that, or Dissension is amazing at the moment, just one copy, even a Paper Shield. I personally, I think there are events that will do more for you.
So good matchups and bad matchups, Alex.
I think that this has a better matchup than... than your deck against a Martell deck.
Yeah.
Shadows allows some versatility that you don't always bring.
Especially when they're bouncing in and out of Shadows.
And I have a reasonable gold curve that I can probably compete if things get a little too tight with things like Gaston and like. And Art of Seduction gives me a much wider window than a lot of other decks have. But I really, really think that Burn. Summer Burn, Dragon Pit Burn, maybe even Knights of the Hollow Hill, depending on how much intrigue pressure I can put on with the, you know, the only claim two I have. I think that really Burn is tearing this deck to shreds.
You know what I'm really worried about, Alex? I'm really worried about this week, last week, and the next 4 weeks. We're going to do this podcast, and every week, what are your bad matchups? Well, I'm worried about Dragon Pit.
That seems to be the case. We're actually hoping to do Dragon Pit fairly soon, but we have a very, very special guest lined up for that one. So I hope we can get it out of the way early so we can start talking about some of the counters to it and some of the solid ways to deal with that deck. But right now, it is probably the deck to beat, and you need to factor it in. So the fact that my deck is vulnerable to Burn is painful.
Yeah, are there any things that you would change to improve that matchup? As you said before, you don't really think that there is anything that you can do.
Pray. We talked about King's Pavilion. We talked about House of Dreams. We talked about some ways of boosting your own strength. You know, Power of Arms could potentially buy, if you went a little deeper in the Warcrest theme, but all that does is buy you a turn of claim, too, that's a lot. I mean, buying you a turn of claim two in which your characters are harder to burn matters, but there aren't very many good Warcrests that I could add to this deck.
Well, there is another thing that you can do.
Change your restricted.
Well, no, I was thinking convince players at the same tournament to play Greyjoy Black Sails. and then hope that they knock the Dragon Pit decks out so when you're in the cut, you don't have to play against them.
That's an excellent point. This deck has a phenomenal matchup against Black Sails. In addition to what we were talking about for both of your decks, the fact that it's no agenda makes those fleets so much harder to play. You know, it makes it that much easier to control their naval icons. All you have to do is drag that game out and you win.
Yeah.
I guess that's it?
Yeah, well, we've gone through three decks. Again, the caveat being that the point of these decks is so that you can use them to either test against or as a first draft to start tweaking your own. I strongly advise that people, if they do that kind of thing, take into account their meta and what they expect to face. Because as we talk through these decks, we say, okay, you know, this card is there because of a matchup we expect to see.
Yeah. In addition, we're not saying that these are the only good builds from any one house. So there's other things out there.
Actually, Lannister's got Conquest.
All right, let's talk about them. So, yeah. What do you think are the other top-tier Lannister builds right now?
Potentially Conquest and Lanny Wildlings. They both jump out at me as being totally legitimate options.
Yeah, so the Conquest, which particular one are you thinking of? Because I have seen one bouncing around that was Lanny Conquest with Greyjoy.
They
seem to be applying some choke and some kneel using Castellan.
I don't rate that version. I think the Greyjoy Martell version of that same deck is quite good, but not the Lanny one. I think you can do like the rush decks, whether it's Lanny Martell or Lanny Vara, I think are both good. And I really like Lanny Martell as a control deck as well, with Gaston Grey and Neil and lots of cool stuff. But
the rushes tend to play the other way around. Well, or either Martell Vara or Vara Lanny.
Yeah, agree.
You mentioned Wildlings, and I think it's probably inferior to both the Vera and the Stark versions, but that doesn't make it a bad deck. I actually built a Night's Watch I really liked, and it kept winning me games, but every time I took a good long look at it, I go, why am I making this Night's Watch instead of Wildlings? And I could never satisfactorily answer the question. I mean, the deck worked. It was quite good.
I experienced the exact same thing, Alex. I built a Lanny Wildlings deck, and then I thought this would actually be better out of Night's Watch, and then I put it together and I played a few games. I'm like, okay, the deck is good and it has potential, but there's something deeply unsettling about playing the Night's Watch cards instead of the Wildling cards.
Yep. I played Alex a few times against that deck, and he actually said to me, I don't know why it's winning.
It looks like a pile of garbage.
It looks like a pile of garbage. I draw lots of cards, though, and then I win, and I don't know why.
I did like the builders. The builders, with some clean too, put pressure on the opponent's hand fast.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it the stewards or the builders?
The stewards.
They come in, pitch a card. Yeah, I don't know. It's cool. It's a nice watch card. No one knows what they're called.
What else do we have? We have other House of Dreams locations, Cersei's Wheelhouse, but I don't
know. No, they do not, Alex. They do not have other House of Dreams locations. They have, occasionally in a matchup, you'll play Iron Throne as your House of Dreams location, but you do that out of a Tunnels deck.
Back in the day, there was some Winter Lannister.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you could, play Kings of Winter, and some people are still fooling around with the new summer agenda, the Song of Fire. Out of Lannister. But I
Song of Fire, garbage. But the Kings of Winter deck, I don't think it's a tier one build, but it's a hell of a lot of fun to play. Really cool deck.
What else do we have? We have Clansmen No Agenda decks, which I just don't think are up there.
No.
But someday they'll surprise me, but that is not this
day. Today.
Not today.
Maesters have always fallen short out of Lanny. There's always somewhere better to do it, even though they have gained... some Learned Crest Picel.
There was a Maester Power Behind the Throne Rush deck that was all right for a little while, but I don't think in the current meta, so...
Yeah, I agree. I think with the Maester deck, one of the major things with it is to grab, as wasteful as it is to grab Aemon with At the Gates to turn on Janos' Conspirators, and I just don't think that's worth it.
No, exactly.
I think it's a waste of your plot, and you can... kick off, as you've seen in all three of these decks we talked about, Janos' Conspirators are easy to trigger.
Yep, they really are.
And there's definitely basically no Black Sails deck there either, so it doesn't leave us with a whole bunch of other things to talk about.
I think we did the three. I really do. I think
we did it.
Okay. Yep.
Did the three with, I think Wildlings warrants a mention.
Sure.
So I think it's good that Justin brought that up, and then Conquest may well have something in there.
But I agree with you, Alex. If you're going to do Wildlings, go look at Barra, go look at Stark. I mean, I think they do it better.
They do it better, yeah.
Yeah, agree completely.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Justin, for doing this. I know that scheduling at this point is...
I'm definitely in trouble, but the missus has opened the door twice with their foot tapping, so I'm thinking, uh-oh. And on this note, there's a shout out that I wanted to make to a dear friend of mine, Andrew the Dread Pirate Gulfdess. And I just wanted to, on internet radio, to all of you, 12 people that listen, your hands are very big, sir.
Okay.
Seriously, they're like shovels. They're the biggest things you've ever seen.
Now you're going to make him go home and cry himself to sleep on a giant oversized pillow. And the reason it's oversized so those big hands can fit under that, right?
He's got a giant oversized pillow. We went to a tournament, and the guys at Games by the Beach, Glenn from there, fantastic bloke, he chucked in some of these HBO pillows, and he got the Stark one. Winter is comfy. It's just amazing.
Winter is comfy.
I can't take credit for that. That was another bloke at the store who came up with that at the time. Brilliant. Brilliant call.
Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Beyond the Wall. We've had a couple questions around what houses we're going to be doing next. So we currently have planned Martell for the next cast, and then after that, Targaryen.
Yeah, so we'll finally be able to answer how to counter Dragon Pits.
Yes. It's not as hard as people think.
It's not that bad. Yeah, I also want to mention that we're doing this slightly different. It's entirely my fault, but I'm away for basically 2 weeks of this month, which makes our recording schedule a little hectic. So some of the content around those episodes might be some canned content, and we may not be able to keep up with regionals in quite the same way we have been. So if we're lucky, you won't notice a thing, and if we're unlucky, you may hear me on some different microphones halfway across the world trying to patch it up.
And I want to remind everyone that on May 18th, we're going to be having the Montreal Regional. I think it's the first regional in Canada. And it's not that far from people in New York. And I know that actually a large, about 4 or 5 people from New York will be coming up. So it should be a pretty competitive regional.
I hope the Boston people take a chance to come up as well. However, with that said, I do want to talk about the regionals coming up this weekend. We still haven't moved to anything in North America, but we've got a regional in Queensland, Australia. We've got one in Chile, in Santiago. Toulouse and Paris are both running their regionals this coming week on different days. Poland also has a regional, and then the UK also has two, one in London and one in Newcastle. So if you're near any of those, unless they're happening the same day, like the London and Newcastle ones, make sure you attend them.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.